Hello, good evening, and thanks for tuning in to AM 800 WRTH, broadcasting out of... And if you're joining us right now, we just got off the phone with John in Saratoga and talked about how he made a connection with the entity in his home and how he learned something about the local history, leading to a personal breakthrough in his own life. We're going back to the phones, and I'm told that Sean from Kentucky is on the line. Sean, it is great to hear from you, and I'm sure everyone wants to know, are you okay? What happened last week after you found all those moving boxes in the house blocking your doors? I don't know, really. I called the police, like you suggested, and two officers arrived just minutes later. They searched the entire house, guns drawn, checked the outside. They didn't find anything. No tracks. Not a sign of anyone else was in the house. A third officer showed up while they were checking the place out, an older man. He talked to me while I was waiting outside, getting some information and just, you know, asking me a bunch of questions. After the other two cops gave the all clear, they left, shaking their heads. I'm sure they thought I was crazy, and so do I. I thanked the older cop and was walking back up to the house when he called my name and motioned me back. He needed more information. No, he asked me if I knew anything about the house, the history of the place, stuff like that. I told him I didn't, and he kind of leaned back against the car and rubbed his eyes. He said, "Look, I'm not trying to scare you here, but this house was the scene of a tragedy about 25 years ago. The folks you bought it from, they didn't live here all that much. They're basically using it as a second home they could live in whenever they wanted to get away from the city life in Nashville. I never heard anything from them, but before these two, the house was pretty much vacant for about 10 years. But what you said about those boxes against the door, that resonated with me." So there was something dark about the place. Well, man, I don't know if I call it dark. See, from what he said, there was a family that lived here, a grandmother taking care of her grandchild for some reason or another. He didn't know why the kid wasn't living with her parents, but apparently she lived here for a few years with Grandma. Anyway, Grandma was kind of overly protective, according to this officer. It made him think that something happened to the kid's parents, since she was so worried about this kid. I mean, the kid went to school, but she pretty much had to go straight there and then straight home. She would get in trouble, he said, if she went out into the forest to play, even with a friend. He said he responded to a couple of frantic phone calls out here where the grandmother was just absolutely panicking. The girl was playing in the woods, and she just knew she was lost or worse, and he told me he'd always find her a few dozen yards out into the trees, just playing and talking to her imaginary friend. Did you happen to do any research into this, Sean? It may answer some questions. Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, the next day I went down to the library and I asked him if I could look through some newspaper archives. And turns out this cop wasn't just spinning a story. I found a couple of articles from the time, and this cop was actually in one of the pictures. Sure, he was younger, but he was definitely there the night it all happened. Sean, what happened? He wasn't wrong. It was a tragedy. The girl didn't show up for school for a couple days, so someone went to check on them. They saw the grandmother in the living room, collapsed. They forced the door open and got inside, and they started to feel lightheaded, like they weren't getting enough oxygen. And it turns out the place was absolutely saturated in carbon monoxide. They had an old furnace, and something had gone horribly wrong. They found the girl upstairs in her bed. Oh, my God. So, maybe I did buy a haunted house? I don't know. The little girl was named Stephanie, and her grandma was Delilah. So I came home and I wandered around. I'm not sure what I was looking for, but I didn't find anything. I did do something weird, though. What's that? I walked into the living room and, keep in mind, there's no one home but me and the dogs. And I talked to them? Talked to them, Sean? Yeah, I asked them if they'd stop moving the boxes around. And nothing happened, but, the boxes? They're where I left them. Nothing has moved since. Well, that's a relief. No, not really. Why? What happened? Why not? Because, well, I don't know what's going on. Maybe I should have expected that. When I started talking to something, maybe it'd want to say something too, and it's all over my office wall. What, Sean? What's on the wall? It's written in pencil, but I didn't put it there. It just says I want to go play. I found it on my wall. It's in one of my notebooks, too. It's all over this notebook. I didn't write it. Sean, are you okay? No! No, damn it, I... What's that? Sean? Something made a noise at my back door. What in the hell?
Outside.
Sean, who was that? I heard that. Who are you? Who's in my house? Damn it, who? Sean? Sean, are you there? Oh, my God. What is that? The fireflies, they... Fireflies, what? The fireflies outside the window in the forest. They're hovering. Their eyes. There are hundreds of them on my window, shaped like eyes. Oh, my God, what in the... Sean? 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 We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. You're listening to WRTH AM 800. Well, listeners, we've been trying to call Sean back in Kentucky, and we're not getting through to him right now. I hope he's okay, as I'm sure you all do too, and I hope we hear from him soon. Sean, if you're still listening, please give us a call. We need to make sure you're okay if we can. In the meantime, WRTH isn't what you'd call a top 40 radio station. Indeed, our only regular musical programs are Hearts of Space on Saturday evenings with Thistle and Shamrock on Sunday mornings. But I wanted to give some time over to music this evening and talk about the music of the supernatural. If there's anything older than tales of ghosts and the paranormal in folklore, it's music. And at its heart, music is there to tell you a story, to offer a feeling, to communicate a sensation when words alone fail you. So it's not surprising, really, that ghosts and music cross over regularly. A ghostly tale can be fascinating on its own, but add the sensation of music, the minor keys, the crawling sense of darkness and dread, and it's a match made in tale-telling heaven. I wanted to share some of my favorite ghostly tunes with you and talk about some of those stories and the sensations I feel when I hear them. We're not a top 40 station, but I managed to convince my program director to allow me a top 5. I wanted a selection that would surprise and delight, so to speak. So let's get started. For the first song, let's begin with, of all things, a country song. So much of country music is about sadness and loss. Sometimes that loss is celebrated with friends in low places, but sometimes that loss appears as an intelligent, full-bodied apparition in a graveyard.
And a drunk man in a cowboy hat took me by surprise, wearing shiny boots, a nudie suit, and haunted eyes. Said, friend, it's good to see you. It's nice to know you care. Then the wind picked up. He was gone. Was he ever really there?
Alan Jackson's song about an encounter with the ghost of Hank Williams Sr. was a big hit in 1992. Midnight in Montgomery tells a personal story of Alan stopping by the graveyard on his way to Mobile, Alabama, for a New Year's Eve concert. It's dark outside, and he steps off the bus to pay his respects to one of his country music heroes. Just as he finds the grave he's looking for, the wind grows calm, and he's surprised by a drunk man in a cowboy hat wearing a nudie suit and shiny boots. Typical attire for Hank Williams Sr. whenever he performed. Jackson gives us that sensational cue throughout the song, sensations that would be familiar to anyone who's spent time on a few paranormal investigations. The wind carries a faint song along with the smell of alcohol, the cause of Hank Williams' death, actually. And while the apparition is quickly gone, Alan catches a shadow through the taillights moving along the ground. It's a celebration of Hank, along with many of his faults. I don't know if the tune is based upon a real experience, but Alan's matter-of-fact way of singing the song gives it a chilling edge. It's not so much that he's telling a story, he's just telling you what happened.
Feel that lonesome chill, 'cause when the wind is right, you'll hear his song, smell whiskey in the air. Midnight in Montgomery, he's always singing there. He's always singing there.
This next song isn't quite the story of a ghost, but rather the story of a young woman who is planning her own haunting. She's stuck in a Catholic school, and it's not the best place in the world for her. But she takes comfort in that if she dies, she's going to haunt the hell out of these nuns.
And if I die today, I'll be the happy hunter. And I'll go chasing the nuns out in the yard. And I'll run naked through the street with all my mask on. And I will never need umbrellas in the rain.
Happy Phantom isn't like most ghostly tunes because songwriter and pianist extraordinaire Tori Amos is absolutely delighted by the idea of getting otherworldly revenge on her habit-wearing taskmasters. She'll chase the nuns through the yard, she's gonna run naked through the streets because, hey, who cares? You can't arrest a ghost. But there is a melancholy feeling that suddenly pops up later in the song, where she wonders about her lover and will she want to come back just to be with him? If they've moved on to another girl, will they forget about her? Or will they call her name when their new love falls asleep? Do we forget the things that we don't see every day? But we move swiftly past that and back to those damn nuns, because if she dies today, she's going nun chasing, and it's a fun tune with a tiny undercurrent of self-depreciation and anxiety. In other words, it's classic Tori Amos.
Woo-hoo, time is getting closer.
But if we're to have jolly frivolity and southern twang, we should also explore the other side of the spectrum, the darkening side where we don't often go. Because sometimes music can be as scary and as unsettling as a horror novel. If you caught last week's show, we talked about a game called Wraith the Oblivion, and if that game had a soundtrack, then it's a good bet that the music of Svartzen would be on it. Jan Roger Pedersen, also known as Svartzen, is a Norwegian musician working in the realm of dark ambience. His atonal, non-rhythmic sounds build upon each other in unsettling ways. He's not making a song so much as he's laying out an atmosphere, a sonic landscape, for the listener to view within their minds. After all, any horror movie director will tell you that the things you can imagine will be far scarier than anything you'll ever see on a screen. Svatson's album of Darkness and Recreation is a feast for the ears and a dark balm for your mind. You may find an uneasy meditative relaxation within here, but only between periods where you're mentally checking out the rest of his world, making sure nothing is lurking there just beyond the twilight. Are you alone in your own mind? Do you hear those distant voices? Or perhaps it's just the music. Perhaps. In all seriousness, if you're at all into something different, or if you're already a fan of dark ambient music, check out Svartzen. He's brilliant, which is ironic since he's also so dark. I think it's the case that many countries have two songs associated with them. The national anthem and the song that should be their national anthem. In the United States, we have the Star Spangled Banner, but seriously, America the Beautiful is a far better song. In the land down under, their national anthem is a tune called Advance Australia Fair, which sounds more like a marketing slogan from the tourism board than a national anthem. That's just one of the many reasons that many Australians consider Waltzing Matilda to be their unofficial national anthem.
Once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree. He sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You'll come a-waltzing Matilda.
Written around 1895 by Banjo Peterson, the Bard of the Bush, and an Australian national treasure, this rather jolly song is about a swaggy waltzing Matilda around the outback when he happens to catch a jumbuck while camping by a billabong. And if you understood any of that, congratulations, you're an honorary Australian. The most famous modern rendition of this song comes from another Bush bard, the late Slim Dusty. His version of the song is so well-loved, he was called upon to perform it live at the 2000 Summer Olympic Games in Sydney, Australia. To put the story in a more common language, a transient worker is having a rest by a small lake when a sheep wanders by. He gleefully captures the sheep, knowing he's going to eat well for the next few days, and stuffs it into a bag. Unfortunately, this sheep belongs to a local landowner who's not too happy about this hobo stealing his livestock. As the landowner and three soldiers prepare to arrest the tramp, he jumps up and dives into the billabong, where he drowns. And as you wander by that billabong today, you'll hear his ghost singing to himself and boiling water for a cup of tea. And while it seems a bit extreme that the swagman would throw his life away so quickly over a sheep, it's a metaphor for the freedom that the swagman valued above almost anything else. Bouncing around the bush, roaming from station to station, a swaggy wouldn't give up that freedom without a fight. But in the face of imprisonment or hanging, this swaggy chose his own way out.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. His ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with everybody. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing.
Back in the 1980s, the news was awash with stories about how heavy metal music was responsible for filling young, impressionable minds with thoughts of violence, suicide, and death. Let me tell you about one of those songs. It's the story of sibling rivalry, where the oldest kills the youngest. After the murder, another person finds the body and proceeds to cut it apart, fashioning a grisly, macabre instrument from the cadaver. Oh wait, that's not a heavy metal song at all. It's actually from a tune that's over 300 years old and brilliantly performed by Lorena McKennitt. Bennett's Haunting Soprano tells a tale of two sisters. In fact, the song is sometimes called the Trois Sisters, but it goes by many names, including the Bonnie Swans, which is what Lorena McKinnick calls her version. The oldest sister is jealous of the youngest boyfriend and wants him for herself. So she shoves the younger sister into the river. If you're sensing a theme here where folk songs seem to focus on drowning people, you're not wrong. Waltzing Matilda, May Colvin, Donegal Danny, My Darling Clementine, Willie's Drowned in Yarrow, and many more folk songs carry some version of a person winding up in the water and never walking back out. Keep in mind, the whole idea of, quote, learning how to swim, unquote, is a relatively new thing in the Western world. Even sailors learn, earning their living on the sea a couple of hundred years ago, they didn't always know how to swim. But because this song comes to us over 300 years of history, from a time when public executions were commonplace events, when they were fun for the whole family, The sister drowning in the river is literally just the beginning of the song. Her body is carried down with the currents, and she's found by the daughter of a miller, who claims she's a swan that just happens to look like the body of a rich woman. After the miller pulls the body out of the river, a harper, one who plays the harp, comes walking along and notices all the excitement, and he looks over the body of this freshly murdered woman and he thinks, you know what? I could make a harp out of that. And he goes along doing just that. He makes harp pins from her finger bones and uses her breastbone for the harp body and then strings the harp with her hair. The fact that he'd have to dismember her corpse to do all of this is just a given thing. I mean, how else would you make a harp out of a dead body? Don't think on that too long. Oh, okay, will you please? As soon as he finishes making this instrument, it starts playing by itself, haunted by the spirit of the recently departed daughter. Naturally, the harper figures that the king really needs to see this. Of course, why wouldn't he? So he takes it to the royal court. Oh, did I mention the king is the father of these girls? That's a little fact that's about to become very important as the harp not only begins to play on its own, but the spectral voice of the daughter fills the halls with the tale of her jealous, evil sister and how she murdered her just for the love of a man. It's a damning statement on its own. The ghost isn't angry just because she's dead. She's also angry because all of this came about because of a man. Some dude who certainly wasn't worth killing anybody for. No matter how ridiculous the circumstances are, Lorena McKinnon's performance is incredible. And with her powerful soprano backed by an electric guitar screaming with mournful rage. There are so many more songs in this vein covering this subject. There's Ghost Riders in the Sky, The Ghost of Tom Joad, Phantom 309, She Moved Through the Fair, Riding with Private Malone, and the list just goes on. But check these tunes out sometime, especially if you've never heard them before. The haunted stories, the accompanied by beautiful voices and instruments, that stuff sticks with you. Happy listening. You've been listening to WRTH AM 800. Thanks for tuning in.